I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's a heart-wrenching tale about addiction, abuse, and the life-cramping effects of poverty and racism. And it's also about hope, faith, joy, and the redeeming power of love. It is the sprawling American opera Porgy and Bess, and the 75th anniversary of its premiere is being observed this year with a revival at the Washington National Opera. The music is probably as well known as any in American life, filled with classics like the opening aria, Summertime. But the racial politics of the story are probably as complicated as ever, perhaps especially because there's an African-American man occupying the White House just a short distance, in fact, from where the opera is being performed. So we thought this was a good time to celebrate and reflect on this phenomenon of American cultural life. So we've decided to call upon artists who have performed in Porgy and Bess then and now. In a moment, we'll hear from two of the male leads currently performing in the Washington Opera production. But first, Maya Angelou. She is, of course, one of this country's most celebrated artists, and she played the role of Ruby in a 22-nation tour of Porgy and Bess, sponsored by the State Department back in the 1950s, and she's with us now. Welcome, my diva. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. Just imagine, that was 60 years ago.
Do you remember how you got the role?
Of course I remember. I'm a writer, and writers either have good memories or nothing at all.
Well, tell us.
Well, I was a dancer who could sing a bit. And the principal dancer, was leaving the company. So when the company came to San Francisco in 1954, I was singing in a nightclub. And some of the artists saw me, and they asked if I could dance on the stage. So, of course, I mean, that's what I really had trained to do. And they invited me to take the role. I couldn't because I was under contract. And then I was offered a role in a Broadway play called House of Flowers. So I went to New York to audition for it. And while I was there, Porgy and Bess called me and asked would I like to join them in Portland, Maine, and then go overseas. And I said yes. The producers of House of Flowers asked me, are you crazy? You're going to take a minimal role in a play going on the road? When we're offering you a principal role for a Broadway play, I said, I'm going to Europe. I'm going to get a chance to see places I ordinarily would never see. I only dreamed of in the little village in Arkansas in which I grew up. Oh, no, I'm going with Porgy and Bess. And Miss Martin, it was one of my best choices.
Will you tell us more about that? I was reading up on this, and a number of the people who've written about Porgy and Bess have talked about the fact that, you know, black folks have had a love-hate relationship with this work. On the one hand, it offered a showcase to wonderful artists such as yourself. On the other hand, you know, the story, the dialect, the representation of black life, frankly, just makes some people sick. So I wanted to ask, you know, tell me a little bit more about why this was such an important experience.
Well, I was with, I don't know how many, 40, 50 people in the company. And they had over 120 degrees in music. There were so few places for black singers trained in European classics to work. The company could afford to get a person who had one degree from Curtis and another from Juilliard just to be in the chorus. And the singers were so great. Now, I could sing by heart, but I didn't love singing. I loved dancing. And I believe you can only become great at something you really love. And so, but I could sing, but every night or two, one of those trained singers would say, Maya, I'm sorry to tell you, but you flatted that C. Or you sharped that G. I didn't even know I was singing in the alphabet. I had no idea. But I learned so much about teamwork, about respect. Because there were the obvious difficulties that happened between personalities. But there was respect always.
you know, sometimes these cultural works, people think of them years later and are not always happy that they were in them. I had the opportunity to visit with Rita Moreno, for example, who's still kind of struggling with West Side Story. You know, on the one hand, it was a great opportunity for her. On the other hand, she still is troubled by the story, the depictions. So I wanted to ask you, at the end of the day, do you think we are better off for Porgy and Bess or worse?
Absolutely. You see, Miss Martin, a poet and a pope and a prisoner and a priest, they all have to be seen in their time. You can't say in 2010, with a black man in the White House and a black woman president of one of the fine universities and so forth, you can't say how people felt in 1952. You cannot know that unless you were there. I was very grateful to be with Porgy and Bess and to know that when Martha Flowers sang the Strawberry Song, that whatever the Gershwins had learned, they had taken that directly out of the mouths of people in the South. This was exactly what was sung. So I was proud to be an African-American. I knew that there was art from the poets and from the Gershwins. I knew there was great art. I also knew that they had been inspired by great art, the great art of the African-American.
Maya Angelou, author, playwright, inspiration, and if we could be the first to wish you a happy birthday, which we understand is forthcoming. We are so delighted to have a chance to speak with you today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much. My pleasure to talk to you.
Now to two men who've been acclaimed for their roles in Porgy and Bess and are performing in the current production with the Washington National Opera. Eric Owens, a bass baritone, is currently performing the role of Porgy. And Larry Hilton, a tenor, who graduated from this city's Duke Ellington School of the Arts, is currently appearing as Sport and Life. And they are here with us in our Washington, D.C. studio. Welcome to you both. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So
hello.
Nice to be here.
And I want to mention that both roles are so vocally demanding that there are two people in each of the roles that you are performing and you switch off. So I want to thank you for giving us this time when you really should be resting your voices. So thank you for that.
It's a pleasure.
I want to pick up where we left off with Maya Angelou. This work has been beloved. It has moved audiences to tears around the world. It's offered a critical showcase to some of the finest African-American performers, but it's always been controversial. The African-American social critic Harold Cruz wrote, "Porgy and Bess belongs in a museum, and no self-respecting African-American should want to see it or be seen in it." So, why did each of you want to be in it? I assumed you weren't under subpoena.
No, we weren't forced into this.
So, Eric, why don't you start? Why did you want this role?
He's a wonderful and complex character, and it's a great piece of theater, and it's great music. And I think we have reached a time in our society where we can appreciate it for what it is and not have it necessarily have any negative connotations about our culture. You know, I know during the Civil Rights Movement, people such as Harry Belafonte and others, they were very critical of the piece. And I always say I can understand that, especially when a group of people can't be self-defining, when someone else from outside the culture has made this piece of art to represent what we're all about. It can be a little disconcerting, especially with the political climate at the time and during the Civil Rights Movement. But, I mean, Gershwin, he lived in Harlem, and he grew up around, you know, black culture, and he loved jazz, of course, and DeBose Haywood, the writer of the novel Porgy, actually lived in South Carolina. So they weren't making this up. They were actually observing a particular community in Charleston.
Okay, Larry, what about you? I remember Grace Bumbry, the opera diva, initially refused a role. Even she eventually did take it, and you play, you know, a drug dealer, which is something that many performers of color just get a little tired of. Any qualms ever?
I just think there's something to be said about ownership. For me, Porgy and Bess is a truly authentic storytelling. It's a story that is bred in Charleston, South Carolina, where I've had the opportunity to perform this role. And when you do it there, there's such a different sense from the audience because it's completely relatable to them. And so it's harder maybe for an outside of that area audience to grasp it at first. But for me, I've never had a problem performing in it. One, because it's such a beautiful piece of music. Two, because the characters are so real and so relatable. Everyone knows a drug dealer. Everyone knows the church lady, and everyone knows someone who has an addiction. All of these characters are portrayed in the show, and so for someone to say that no self-respecting black person would go and see this show just lets me know that they don't have the education required to understand it.
Oh, well, he had plenty of education. He just had an opinion, strong opinion, but a strong opinion. I'm just going to quote from George Gershwin, quoted in the New York Times in 1935. And he writes, "Because Porgy and Bess deals with Negro life in America, it brings to the operatic form elements that have never before appeared in the opera. And I have adapted my method to utilize the drama, the humor, the superstition, religious fervor, the dancing, and irrepressible high spirits of the race."
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, all opera takes on this heightened sense of drama, and you can find characters like these in the European operas as well. I mean, so yeah, I think that's
so. Eric, talk to me about Porgy and what you're bringing to it, and just so that people can just experience a little bit of your deliciousness, I'll play a little bit of you.
Oh, goodness.
As I mentioned, many people, they know this music even if they don't know why they know this music. They don't even remember how they heard it, but they know it. Here's you singing. Well, everybody knows what it is. Here it is. So when you were preparing to be Porgy, as you are portraying him, what are you thinking about?
Even though he's disabled, he's very strong. He's got a very strong character, and his upper body strength is very strong. I mean, it's shown several times when he grabs Sport and Life and he ultimately kills Crown. So I come at it from a sense of him not being a victim, having a strength, but also there's a vulnerability there. He lives in this community where he sees other people having lives that he doesn't think he'll ever have, a family, a wife, children, what have you. And when he does finally connect with Bess, I mean, it's this wonderful thing that I think he really is trying to hold on to. And also there's a softness about him as well. I mean, that Bess has never experienced this sort of love, this kind of tenderness with Crown. It's just sort of, come here, woman, you know. And so I think they're there experiencing something with each other that they never have before.
Larry, what about you? I'll just play a little bit of you as a Sport and Life. You really get to do a lot. I mean, you get to wear a fabulous costume. I mean, poor Porgy just gets some pants and a shirt.
He's got one.
And he gets one outfit.
And it's a 2-month span in the opera, so he must start to really smell.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Bess starts doing laundry, so we hope that got taken care of. But you get to wear a fabulous costume. You get to dance. You get to be mean and, you know. You're a drug dealer, pimp. What are you thinking about as when you're bringing Sport and Life to life?
Well, I get to be mean, but I get to be likable. Those are contradictions, I know. But my entire intent is to get away from Catfish Row. I'm a part of that community. It is a large community, but I've been outside of there, so that I know the world is a larger place, and so I'm always looking for the next trick or the next way to get myself away from Catfish Row.
Washington is a special place to be performing Porgy and Bess. It was the last stop on a 3-month U.S. tour that ended in Washington in 1936. In the initial tour, it was the last production George Gershwin was to see. It was the scene of a famous stand by Eric is not here, by the leads at the time, Todd Duncan and Anne Brown, because the stars refused to perform in a segregated theater, which the National Theater was at that time, and for many, many years. And even though they were threatened with career suicide at the time, they absolutely refused, and they won. And the National Theater did, in fact, desegregate for the run of Porgy. So there is that. It's a piece. Of course, they resegregated after that, but that's a whole other story. And now you're here with an African-American in the White House, an African-American leading. And I wonder, does any of that come together for you in any kind of interesting way?
I think that reinforces the idea of enjoying the piece as a piece of music theater. And not having to put all these, you know, racial tensions on the piece or you know, being ashamed of doing the piece. You know, we have come a long way.
I want to leave where the Washington Post writer Ann Majette ended her review. She writes, "The music will endure, whether the piece will or even should, given the limitations of its portrayal of its characters, is open to question." Kind of a tough question. What do you think, Larry? What do you think? Should it?
I think that it is an awesome piece of not only American history, but musical history, and that it's time for Porgy and Bess to be treated as grand opera instead of this racially motivated or somehow something to keep us from doing something. It for me, is a springboard, and I just believe that if it's treated as such from its inception, then it will become that.
Larry Hilton is currently appearing as Sportin' Life. Eric Owens is currently appearing as Porgy in the Washington National Opera production of Porgy and Bess. Performances continue through Saturday. They both joined us in our Washington, D.C. studios. Gentlemen, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's our program for today. Tell Me More is produced by Chinita Anderson, Brecton Booker, Jessica Deal, Monica Evstatieva, Jasmine Garst, Elliot Hannon, Lee Hill, Douglas Hopper, Arjun Hutchins, and Enrique Rivera. Our intern this semester is Danielle Gerson. Our editors are Tanya Ballard-Brown and Lori Grant. The show's senior editor this week is Alicia Montgomery. Our senior producer is Emily Oxenschlager. The program is directed by Rob Sachs. Our technical director is Kimberly Jones. She had a hand this week from Chris Nelson and Neil Tevault. Our theme music was composed by Underdog Entertainment with additional arrangements by Ian Honeyman. The supervising senior producer is Tashima Walker. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News and the African American Public Radio Consortium. Let's talk more tomorrow.